ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Charismatic, rich, stylish, glamorous. Christopher and Pixie Skase were the it couple of the 80s.
Getting an invitation to a Skase party was prized real estate.
But when their business empire teeters, it's Pixie who pays a massive price.
A sort of gilded cage that she was a prisoner in.
I'm Mark Humphreys. To binge the full series now, search for ABC Rewind and look for Skase, Fall of a Tycoon on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, welcome to the Philosopher's Zone. This is David Rutledge, and we're getting into a slightly different take this week on wisdom and knowledge. Because I think for many of us, when we think of philosophy, we think of the profession of philosophy, and it's certainly the case that radio shows and podcasts like this one deal, for the most part, with philosophical issues, philosophical debates that take place within the academy, among academic philosophers. And then what I try to do is present those issues and those debates in a way that connects them to everyday life. But of course, everyday life throws up plenty of its own issues that have to do with knowledge and identity and power. And we're looking at one of those everyday life issues this week. The way that knowledge around parenting and child rearing can become highly contested terrain in the modern digital age. You might have heard of an app called Baby Center, which offers advice and other digital tools to pregnant women and new mothers and their partners. Baby Center claims to have 34 million users each month, and while it's based in the USA, Baby Center users can be found all over the world, in countries like India and Brazil and elsewhere in the global south. And while there's something quite wonderful about the latest expert advice on pregnancy and parenting being made available to everyone everywhere, there are a lot of countries and cultures where the latest expert advice can clash with older cultural ways of having babies and bringing them up. So what does it mean when traditional caregiving becomes mediated through digital tools and globalized algorithms? Well, my guest this week is very well positioned to talk about all of this. Her name is Georgia Felton. She's a Brisbane-based author and human rights activist, and she's currently working on a narrative research project titled Tales from the Trenches, which has had her travelling the world and talking with new mothers about the many challenges that they're facing in the digital era. Georgia, tell me about your forthcoming book, Tales from the Trenches, Bringing Up Babies Around the World. Such an interesting project. It had you interviewing over 100 mothers in various parts of the world. What's been the impetus behind that book? Like, why did you get started on it in the first place?
I suppose it came ultimately from a place of complete frustration and also, honestly, loss. I'd lost my mum just before my first child was born, and I think without her guidance there, I was a little lost, and I went searching, like so many parents do, for advice and parenting help through all the online resources and books. And what I found in that journey was just complete overwhelm. There was a lot of contradictory advice, and a lot of pressure just to get everything right. And so in talking to other mothers around that time, I realised that I wasn't, in fact, alone in feeling these sorts of feelings of anxiety and overwhelm, and I realised that mothers everywhere were actually feeling the same way, which was, in my mind, a consequence of these resources that were presenting to us everywhere. And so that really was the seed for what this began, this project, Tales from the Trenches. And I wanted to go and talk to mothers living around the world in different communities and different cultures on their parenting experience that gave diversity to this one-size-fits-all parenting approach that was rife across all these resources. So that's what I did, and I went off and I interviewed around 100 different mothers, and it was incredible. And what I discovered was absolutely fascinating. There was these beautiful stories, deeply personal stories of resilience and love and centuries-old techniques and a lot of truths, universal truths that I feel we can all identify with. So for me, it really ultimately wasn't just a research project. It really became one of perspective in realizing that there isn't just one way, one size fits all. There's no one right way to parent our children. And I felt that in that diversity really lay a lot of freedom. And I guess that's what I was sort of ultimately hoping that venture would spring to mind, and it certainly did, and hopefully it will to others as well.
Mm. Yeah, and in that diversity, you discovered something that you said came as a surprise to you, which is that parents around the world are increasingly, as you were, going online to look for parenting advice. Why are they doing that? Like, especially in places like the Global South, where there already exist very deep and strong traditions of child rearing that presumably work for those cultures.
Mm, yeah. Look, it's multi-layered. And I think, firstly, a lot of the advice that parents tend to be getting these days from their elders feels to some of these women as outdated. And perhaps that has something to do with the digital age. Certainly, there's that sense of the advice feels to be outdated. So a lot of them are turning online to resources for that reason. Also, you know, it's so accessible. So you can be in a little rural village in Africa and in a couple of clicks you're getting this advice, and it's supposedly science-backed advice, in a few seconds. And so, yeah, it's multi-layered, but also parent isolation is also real. So I think the internet offers that sort of virtual village, so to speak, in a time where people are feeling less connected. You know, our families are more scattered. That traditional village that we once had is no longer. And so the internet really does offer that source of comfort and offers advice and connection that was once found in family.
Mm. Yeah. And among those cultures, I mean, you say that you found universal wisdom, you know, universal truths, you know, things that were really, really helpful to you. But you also say that you went originally in search of unique and diverse approaches to parenting. But what you often found in these interviews that you did was less diversity, a degree of uniformity. What did that uniformity look like? I mean, what were some of the parenting approaches or techniques that you were encountering again and again?
Yeah. Yes, it was surprising. So just how similar from Africa, Latin America, Asia, Europe, everywhere. What I was finding that not everyone, but a great proportion of people were all feeding on demand. They were all tracking sleep and co-sleeping for the early months. And certainly I didn't particularly expect to find those things happening in those more traditional multi-generational homes, which naively I had a preconceived notion. I felt that some of those households would be less time orientated and less results-driven, like the ways we are in the West, whereas, in fact, that wasn't quite so at all. They were sort of following the same sorts of approaches, because they too are also, a lot of them, online.
Mm.
So a lot are choosing modern over old, but there is also a bit of a blending happening of the two.
Right. Is there a problem there? I mean, I'm sure that the app developers and the developers of these online resources, they would say that the advice that they dispense is scientific and reliable. It comes from evidence-based research. Is that in fact the case? And is it the point?
Mm. Sure. Look, it might in fact be true. But I think what tends to be missing is context. No app can fully account for individual personality. Circumstances or cultural background or the values of a person and a child or a parent and a child. So whilst these apps, they can be helpful as a guide or as a point of reassurance, I really don't think they should be there to replace the lived experience or the wisdom that can come from older generations, certainly not all the time. Let's make that clear, but it's often there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get a sense, though, of the kinds of knowledge about motherhood or about child rearing that are lost or devalued when digital platforms become the primary source of parenting advice?
Yeah. Yeah, I think That is an interesting one. I think there's a lot that is lost, particularly the nuance and the cultural wisdom that comes from lived experience. I think, you know, elder knowledge is honed over generations and it's tailored to local circumstance and a family's value. And apps and websites really can't replace that. It's they don't carry the stories, they don't carry the instincts, the little tricks that have been proven to work over decades. So what concerns me, though, is that if we're all reading from the same resources, are we at risk of uniform parenting around the world? And in that case, you know, are we weakening our cultural identities? So, yeah, it's an interesting one.
You write in your article that cultural child-rearing traditions can often hold wisdom that's been accumulated over centuries. And while I completely see what you mean there, can we assume that what is accumulated over centuries is only wisdom? Like, is it possible that cultural traditions could also be repositories of beliefs and practices that are unhelpful or even harmful?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a crucial point. I think traditions aren't automatically good or wise. I think they're a real mixed bag. Many do hold incredible practical knowledge tested over generations, but some really carry outdated, even harmful ideas, particularly about gender roles, health standards, discipline, and ultimately what a good parent is supposed to be. So, I think the key is to approach it critically and to keep parts that are helpful and that resonate and to adapt or discard those that don't fit with modern values, family needs. So I think it's about finding balance, so having a respect for the past whilst being clear as to what works for you and your child today.
Yeah, there's something about this discussion that makes me think of a country like Japan, where people will often say, oh, Japanese culture is becoming so westernized. Like they've got McDonald's and Starbucks and the Gap store and they're using more and more English words and so on. And then you go to Tokyo and you see that, yes, that's all true, but it's more the result of a process of cultural adaptation than straight up Western hegemony. Like you would never be in a McDonald's in a Japanese city and think you were anywhere other than in Japan because the Japanese adopt things from the West and they make them thoroughly Japanese. And you see that in other Asian countries as well, where modernity has a very different and specific cultural identity from one country to the next. So is it a given then that the use of these parenting apps is replacing older cultural wisdom? Like what evidence do you find of mothers who are using digital resources as part of a process of enhancing and adapting older cultural traditions?
Yeah, look, I think the apps, whilst they're not completely replacing cultural wisdom, it's more complicated than that. What I did find in my research was that many mothers are using these digital platforms alongside these traditional approaches. So it is, in essence, as you say, more of a hybrid approach. So, for example, there was one mother, Ogbara, who I interviewed, and she follows modern sleep routines and uses all these online resources. But at the same time, she still is applying these ancient remedies, such as, you know, superstitions over how to cure hiccups. And the reason she does that is because she really wants to maintain a connection to her heritage. So that's quite a conscious decision for her.
Interesting. And she doesn't necessarily believe that this practice will cure hiccups
then? No, she doesn't. She laughs at it.
A connection with culture, yeah.
It is. And I think it keeps her connected to her mum and, you know, and those that came before her. She comes from a little remote community and she's surrounded by a lot of traditional ways and in particular a lot of traditional medicine. And so her family were very persistent on her using some of these techniques such as circumcision, using an object at home to perform the procedure and such things that, you know, a lot of us in the West would feel were very much outdated. So she was very much torn between obviously wanting to, she was an educated woman, had been to university, had moved back to this rural village to raise her child. So whilst there was this pressure to incorporate this traditional medicine into her parenting techniques, she didn't agree with them, but she really liked the history that came with them. And so she didn't actually use those techniques, but she honoured her parents by trying to find a middle ground, so to speak, so that she didn't circumcise her child at home with a coin, but she was able to use other traditional medicine approaches. So, you know, she still used the herbal tea that came after the procedure that he ended up getting done in hospital. But yeah, so she was really trying to adapt by using a little bit of both, a little bit of the modern, a little bit of the old. And other mothers that I spoke to, similar. So adopting these evidence-based, often feeding and sleep guidance that they're finding on these online resources whilst keeping these little rituals and cultural practices because they feel meaningful.
Mm.
So, yeah. So rather than being an either-or, they're really blending. They're seeking the modern advice for reassurance and practical guidance and the traditional advice to maintain that connection and to culture and identity.
Yeah. My partner in a previous life was a documentary maker, and she made a documentary a few years ago about immigrant Italian women in country Victoria and the sorts of remedies and sort of folk medical practices that they had brought over from Calabria when they came to Australia. And they all talked about these, you know, some of them were rather bizarre sounding ways of curing hiccups with their kids, curing constipation, you know, various sort of disorders. And they were all sort of charming and pre-modern and what have you, but these women didn't really talk about it in terms of what works. You know, what works is we go to the doctor, but it was more in terms of this is what we do. You know, it was just a sort of an articulation of a practice. And it was very, very important, but it sort of existed in that interesting space that isn't quite belief. It's not sort of, you know, faith in empirical science or something like that, but it is still very, very important. So you're talking about a similar thing there.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really is. It's that connection to our roots, isn't it? And who we are. And I think that just those sorts of funny little things, those little rituals and so forth, they're what make us feel alive.
On ABC Radio National and ABC Listen, this is The Philosopher's Zone with me, David Rutledge, and my guest this week is Georgia Felton. Georgia is the author of a forthcoming book, Tales from the Trenches, From Mongolia to Madagascar and Beyond. And she also has an excellent piece currently on the ABC Religion and Ethics website titled Do Parenting Apps Signal the End of Grandmother Wisdom? You can find a link and lots more information on The Philosopher's Zone website.
A lot of these apps are created from a Western perspective, and so therefore they come with Western assumptions. So the risk is that we're not including a lot of those, the local knowledge and so forth that is really important. And it's missing, and I think particularly in these non-Western countries that are exposed to these Western resources, they're really missing out on that local context.
But you write about how the preference for modern rather than traditional parenting advice is causing familial tension in a generational conflict. Tell me about that. What does that look like?
It is certainly an issue, and I was coming across it a lot. So I think particularly in those homes where there's multi-generations under one roof and there's a lot of pressure from their elders and family members to raise their children in a certain way. And they were very vocal, a lot of these women, about how difficult that really is. So I'm seeing a lot of it, and it's everywhere, particularly in homes where there's a lot of generations under one roof. A lot of those women have expressed how difficult it is in those environments where there's a lot of differing advice and a lot of pressure to raise their child in a certain way with some values that just don't align with them anymore. So, and that's where these online resources become actually really helpful and empowering for these women, because they have this validation and confidence that they can gain from these resources in realizing that they don't in fact need to raise their child in this one way that their family's telling them to, that doesn't quite align with their modern values.
Mm. So they're happy by and large. I mean, I suppose we're generalizing here, but happy to take the win there and accept the usefulness of the modern information at the cost of tension within the family.
Yeah, it's a bit of both. I think the few women that I did nut this out with, it was interesting. And I think it really is a love-hate relationship that they do have with these resources, because whilst they're trying to maintain these connections with their family, and a lot of time it's their in-laws that they're living with, so it's even more difficult. So whilst they're trying to not rock the boat and respectfully listen to the advice that they're being given from family, they also really are trying to seek what is supposedly current and science-backed. So it's a juggling act for them. And as I said, it is a bit of a love-hate sort of situation.
There's a sort of chicken and egg question here. And I want to know if you think that erosion of trust in older traditions is something that has happened as a result of the use of parenting apps, or is it the case that the erosion of trust was already there and that's what got these mothers going online in the first place?
Yeah, it's so hard to say which came first, isn't it? But certainly I think people don't trust these old ways anymore so much in this modern digital age. I think parents are finding it hard to relate to these older generations, and likely vice versa. But yes, because of that, there's this increased disparity, and it's impacting the trust between the two generations. So I feel like that's been an issue that's always been there. So apps and websites aren't necessarily causing that loss of trust. They're probably there more to fill a gap. So yes, it is a chicken and the egg. What came first? I'm not sure.
I guess, though, that erosion of trust might be putting a little strongly, but traditional, you know, cultural practices are constantly under processes of revision anyway, aren't they?
You know, they are.
I think in the West we have this, we can often have this sort of romantic ideal of communities in the global South as being sort of preserved in this state of tradition, which just never changes.
Yes.
Whereas actually the collision with modernity has definitely been a sort of something of a rupture for a lot of these communities. But it's not like change hasn't been there. It's not like these traditions haven't had to be reassessed, and that there's a sort of a process of falling in and out of favour that I imagine is always the way. Is that the sense that you got?
Definitely. And I do think we probably romanticise it, and culture is for sure always changing, and we keep what's useful and we discard what's not and what's valuable. So, yeah, it's a changing space, of course.
And it's not always a comfortable process.
No, it's not. I think there is grief in it, and I certainly feel that way. I mean, there's some of these old, lovely old practices. You know, there's some that are worthy of keeping, but a lot does just fall by the wayside. Mm. So, and particularly in those families that are, you know, multicultural families that are emerging, families that have two parents that have come from different backgrounds themselves, then a lot seems to fall away.
You mentioned empowerment there, and I'm interested in I'm assuming that the majority of users of parenting apps are women. Are these women empowering themselves by gaining access to new tools and information, or is there also a sense in which they're just developing reliance on a new source of external authority?
Hmm. There is definitely empowerment going on, I think, again, from those women in those sort of situations where they're living with family, and it gives them this other point of reference, gives them some confidence and that sense that they're in more control of their decisions. On the other hand, I think these apps do hold a lot of assumption that women are the sole carers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are reinforcing that it's, in fact, the mother's job to manage everything and everything perfectly, 24/7. So I think whilst they can be a tool for empowerment, they can also reflect and probably amplify that expectation that that mothers carry the bulk of the responsibility.
Are there people developing apps within the Global South that reflect and support local child-rearing traditions? Because so far we've talked about it very much in this frame of Western app developers, you know, making incursions into child-rearing outside the West.
Mm. Yeah, and it's a really exciting space because there are, although they're relatively rare, there are developers out there in the Global South that are trying to develop these digital parenting tools that do cater for local customs and knowledge. And I think that way parents don't have to be in a position where they have to choose between modern advice and cultural heritage. So it shows that, I suppose, that there is this potential for technology to support parenting in a way that is both relevant and authentic to different communities rather than just focusing on one.
Well, taking it out of the Global South now, I mean, I'm sort of interested in universalizing things a little bit here. And I'm wondering about the extent to which it is even possible to translate parenting knowledge into digital forms at all. And not just traditional parenting knowledge, but parenting knowledge everywhere across the board without losing some of its meaning. I mean, I wonder if you think there is something intrinsic to parenting that has to be communal and embodied, and that no app, no digital resource is ever going to provide that.
Yes, absolutely. You can't fully capture parenting completely through online resources. Apps can't help you with those little cues, and they can't help you understand these individual personalities as they begin to unfold. As we know, parenting is about the relationships, that emotional connection. And that's just something that can't be quantified or reduced to a procedure on an app. So, yeah, so whilst these tools, they can support parents, they're absolutely never going to answer that deeply human and hands-on aspect of raising a child.
Mm. Yeah, there's the hands-on aspect, and then there's something about the, I don't know, moral architecture of the app, if that's the term I'm looking for. I mean, I'm not a parent, but yeah, it seems that parenting is inevitably a practice that involves uncertainty, vulnerability, a lot of chaos, pretty fundamental working of one's own identity. And all those things seem to me to be way out of step with the values of the parenting advice marketplace, which is full of metrics and goals and, you know, progress charts and so on. It seems like the parenting advice marketplace operates in a language that's actually quite foreign to the experience of child rearing.
Yeah. Look, this is something I really care so much about. I think if developers out there they're creating tools that are influencing how people are raising children, then they absolutely have a responsibility to consider the wider impact of what messages they're sending. You know, they really need to be aware of how they're creating stress on mothers and this intergenerational conflict. You know, there's a lot of pressure that they are placing on parents. So this is something that they need to be aware of. So I feel that ideally these apps really need to be providing guidance that is flexible and culturally sensitive, not prescriptive.
Georgia Felton. She's a writer and human rights activist based in Brisbane. Her forthcoming book is Tales from the Trenches, From Mongolia to Madagascar and Beyond. And as I mentioned, she also has an essay on the ABC Religion and Ethics website asking, do parenting apps signal the end of grandmother wisdom? Well worth a read. It's a wonderful piece, and I'll put a link to it on the Philosopher's Zone website. This episode of The Philosopher's Zone was produced on Bundjalung Country by me, David Rutledge, and it's been great to be with you. Hope you can join me next time. Bye for now.